Aloha kakahiaka. Good morning. Pilikia Opono is a production of three independent stalwart souls who get up at the crack of black. What happened to our sun? I really understand the ancient ways of, oh my goodness, the sun has left us never to return, and all of the behaviors and celebrations and all of that stuff that was around that, including salmon and all kinds of things. I get it. The days get shorter and we get all discombobulated. It doesn't seem right. Some ways I like it. Some ways I just go, okay, you are coming back, right, son? Because we like need you. So, good morning. And this is Pilikia Opono. This is Maka'ala, and Mauna Kea is with us this morning. Mauna, are you there?
Hey, aloha.
Hey, aloha. Hey, you are there. Wherever there is. I think there is sort of, you know, could be anywhere in this day of technology. And I find myself asking that as a first line in some emails. Where are you? Are you on planet Earth or are you somewhere else? And I want to start this morning by thanking Laura Christine again for coming in and doing this out of love. This is totally volunteer. This is out of love. And for thanking Mauna Kea for sticking with it, because it can get a little off center once in a while. He and I do talk. We think about what we're going to say, and then it seems to all go circular when the microphone gets in front of Maka'ala. He says, "I'll follow your lead," and I say, "I'll follow your lead." So, hence, folks, if you think anybody's leading, you would be in error. But today, we had a suggestion, actually, on a theme, which we do appreciate. If you folks want to hear specific stuff, please email gm@kkcr.org, and they will let us know what your ideas are. We're very, very welcome to them. But today, I suppose we're going to talk about water. Maybe from a couple of different angles than you're accustomed to hearing about it, but here we go. Okay, so here's the way this works. Mauna Kea starts with something intelligent that he has read and thought about and considered. And Maka'ala derails it by saying, that doesn't quite fit with the way I see the world. Let's see if we can come through the back door on that one. Okay. So, Mauna, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, water. one of the most important things in these islands.
Yeah. Yeah, it's to me it is of interest and some speculation that some of our islands seem to have plenty and some of our islands seem to have nearly zilch. I'm thinking of Lanai. And I'm assuming that something happened on that island that deforested it or the like that prevents some of the water from being caught. There's really only one watershed on Lanai, which is fascinating. But for us on Kauai, this program is being brought to you on the island of Kauai. We have water. We do have water. Whether we have a way to get it to you is another issue, but we do have water. So, as usual, Pilikia Opono is going to start back with some historical context. So, let's go, Mauna. What did you read last night?
Yeah, so, so first off, yeah, the suggestion came in from Erin, who's learning about water right now, and she thought it would be interesting to talk about. And I think it's it's a good topic too, because really everything is dependent on water, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for historical and cultural grounding, a couple things, I think. The first is Mo'olelo, the Waters of Kane chant. That's the most important place to start. It essentially says waters everywhere. And keeping with the Hawaiian tradition of, using duality. So it's up, it's down, it's in the horizons, it's where we are, it's in the mountains, it's in the earth, it's everywhere. Water surrounds us everywhere. And that's true. It's like a recognition of the hydrologic cycle. And the interesting thing about it is the Kane chant itself, I'm going to pull it up.
Oh, he's using references, folks. By the way, I'm going to take this moment to remind all of you that Mauna does an amazing thing by providing all of the references and links to the things he cites and quotes on the KKCR website. So it is everything that he talks about. If you'd like to go back and read more, learn more, check on him, check on us. Don't check on me. There's no references for me. but they are all there, which, completes this story, completes the conversation. So if you're ever thinking, now, where in the world did they get that kakamimi idea? He will tell you, and he will provide the link. So we appreciate that too, Mauna. It's kind of unique in this world. Okay.
Yeah, you don't got to believe us, but we'll let you know where it is. Come to your own conclusions.
Yeah.
So it's a six stanza chant, and the sixth one ends after it says, it's the water is in the eastern gate where the sun rises. It's out there in the floating sun in the breast of Nihoa, so it's at the west on the mountain peak in the valleys deep. At sea in the ocean in the driving rain. It ends by saying, one question I ask of you, where flows the water of Kane? Deep in the ground, in the gushing spring, in the ducts of Kane and Kanaloa, a wellspring of water to drink, water of magic power, the water of life. Life will give us this life. I think that's really interesting because the Hawaiian phrase, he vai puna, he vai e inu, that's the, a spring, Waipuna, and Hewae Inu, to drink. So, keeping with Native Hawaiian culture, everything was used and put to use. So the Hawaiians looked at water as something to use appropriately, but nonetheless to use. So I think that's important to recognize in today's dialogue and analysis, that if it is for a good use, it's for, in this case, like a public trust use, right, let's say. There's nothing wrong with using the water. Water can be used, and culturally it should be used. And again, the public trust doctrine states, for the benefit of present and future generations, the state and its political subdivisions shall conserve and protect Hawaii's natural beauty and all resources, including water, and shall promote the development and utilization of these resources in a manner consistent with their conservation and furtherance of the self-sufficiency of the state. All public natural resources are held in trust by the state for the benefit of the people. So it's that second clause, shall promote the development and utilization of these resources in a manner consistent with conservation and furtherance of self-sufficiency. That's important. So it's not a prohibition on use. And Kane, and the legend goes, Kane and Kanaloa they come from Kahiki to these islands, whether it's from Kane Hunamoku or some other cluster of islands. And they walk around the islands poking springs everywhere. Every time Kanaloa wants to drink awa, Kane pukas the ground or the mountain and gets water for that. So I think that's important to remember when we talk about things like developing housing, increasing water for use in agriculture. The use of water in and of itself is not evil. right? There's no value to it. It's how you use it and what it's for. And then in looking at ancient, I don't like the word ancient because it's really just pre-contact. So 1777 is not ancient. You know, Europe was cranking out. I mean, it was secularizing. The American Revolution had happened. That's not ancient. That's history. So historical horns, pre-contact. You know, we had the Konohiki was the overseer of the entire Ahupua, right? And maybe a Moku or something bigger, but generally Ahupua. So Konohiki appointed a lot of sub-managers, and one was the Kahuwai, who oversaw the water use. And what I understand in doing the research is that water access was allotted to Makainana and everyone, dependent upon the labor they put into the water system. Because they, you know, ditches are very, and Awai are, they're hard to build. You got to move rocks, you got to dig with sticks. It's a labor-intensive activity, and it requires a lot of people, given the technological limitations they had. So everyone had to chip in. And if you didn't work, you didn't drink. So the water was conveyed via Awai, and every farmer had a gate from which he could take his share. And the Kahuwai and, you know, Konohiki, they dictated how much water everyone got. And your share was dependent upon the level of your labor, not the size of your field or lo'i. So that's important to remember. And then and from there you have the general context of, you know, everything flowed, pardon the pun, from that.
And that's a really different concept than one that I'm a little familiar with, which is what the situation often is on the continent, and that is that they have essentially that same kind of person. They have a water master, and there's a water conveyor of some sort, usually a large ditch or a small canal, usually hardened in some way, and it has a series of gates and openings. And depending upon how much water there is, they allocate a certain amount, usually by schedule rather than amount. Usually by schedule. You get this side of the highway gets on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and that side of the highway gets on Mondays and Wednesdays, and Friday we shut them off to kind of let it go. But it's based on your need, their perception of your need, but also your reporting of your need. So if you had, you know, a whole lot more cattle, or you had a whole lot more crop, then the allocation would be different. But there were these gates, like we know water gates today. So they were a set of boards that you could, you know, lift or put back in place. And they were connected in such a way that there was a large padlock that would be put on them. So the water master would come around with his designations and his allocations, and he would come back around and open and close and lock these gates. And when I was younger, and I don't know, I was going to say less well-behaved, but that'd be argument in the community about when I was ever well-behaved. But at any rate, that it was a great game to try to bust the lock. And eventually, as we got older, we used guns, and that worked really well to blast the lock. And then the water master would come along and scold and scream and jump up and down and say, "You kids," and da-da-da. And you know, nobody ever really got in serious trouble for it because he just replaced the lock. But he must have had 1,000 locks because this was quite a game. But the point I'm making is that the allocation was based on something quite different than what you're describing in Hawaii. It was based on size of your acreage and use of your acreage, your need, rather than any effort that you had put into maintaining it. And frankly, as I think back, I don't remember many of us ever working to maintain it. I'm not exactly sure who did that, but it weren't me. But we always wanted more water. The irrigation regime on our ranch would flood the field. Yeah, so open the gate, flood the field, and then close the gate. That was the way we ran things. But I will say that water came straight from Mount Shasta and Mount Lassen, and you could drink that water. I don't care where it ran through, you could drink that water. It was amazing. And the rivers that flowed around there, from which these ditches got their water, apart from the fact that they were icy cold, you certainly didn't swim in them, were full of fish. So it was a very productive system of water in Northern California. Northern California's got a lot of water. Problem is, it sends it to everybody else. And I don't remember us ever watering a lawn, or my aunt had some flower beds. I don't remember. I think she used buckets to water that. I don't remember, you know, that water going for that use. So even there, it was to feed people. It went to the cattle. It went to the fields of food for the cattle. But great water wars, you know, in period of time that I was an active environmentalist in Northern California, there was quite a movement to sever the state, split the state. Northern California wanted to be divided from Southern California, the have and the have-nots. Of course, that was politically difficult to come to any resolution, but it was around water. Every fight I've ever seen has been around water. Whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. You know, that's that's where that came from, right? But I don't have a sense from you that happened in the chief system. What they said went, and there wasn't much discussion about that. Nobody rose up and said, "No, we don't like that idea. We want ours on Tuesdays and Thursdays." He or his agents would say, "We have plenty, and so we'll do this." And they'd say, "We don't have plenty right now, and we'll do that." It seemed to be based more on a biological system, yeah. What was actually there?
I think it sounds like it's really different, because the system you described in Northern California at the time, and what would have been how it would have been in the West for a long time, because they had private property ownership, would be based on, you know, need, I guess, and size of lots and what you were using it for, and probably it was related to, I don't know, the amount of taxes you paid on your property,
yeah,
or
and
something
a little
like
bit
that,
of politics,
you know,
would seep into it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not a clean
movie, right?
It was not a clean system for decision making, I will tell you that. Mm-hmm. It was, so when you have a chief system, some of that gets, you know, peeled away. That doesn't, you know, doesn't play into it, and unless he really does a bad job, and then even Hawaiian people would rise up and say, "You're doing a lousy job, you know, so gotta do better than this or out with you."
And I think that the difference too was Hawaii, there was no land ownership. It was all based on what the ruling chief gave you at the time, and your ability to hold on to it was dependent upon how productive it was. And so, like land, which, you know, if the Konohiki granted you land, or the chief granted the Konohiki land, you only kept it as long as you produced it. Laziness was punished by dispossession. And so that tracked. It would be the same with water. It makes sense that it would, because if you're not contributing to the whole, then you're not getting anything from it. You don't work, you don't eat. You don't work, you don't drink. And that, which is interesting, because, you know, the narrative for a long time has been Hawaiians, you know, paradise and cruise at the beach and dune. It wasn't. I mean, it was very much work, 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 constantly. Because you have to. I mean, anyone trying to fight guinea grass in the yard knows it never stops. And so I thought that was interesting.
Now, guinea grass has its roots in hell. You can dig, you can torch, you can pray, you can scream, and it persists. It's one of those. It's going to succeed, folks. It's going to take us over if we're not a little more creative in how we address it. I think too that it's important to understand that the water that comes down, some water must remain. Some water must get to the ocean. We can't stop it all before it reaches the shore. There's a case that I was slightly involved in Oahu and Ewa Beach, where a development actually blocked the path of the water to the ocean. And the limu, the seaweed, suffered. And there was an old Uncle Henry, and he took it to the BLNR, he took it to the Water Commission, he took it to the court. And he passed away, and the organization, one of the organizations that I'm very involved with, Kuaina Ulua Wamo, we went to court and said, may we please take this case over? And they said, yes, you may. You are the same people, and you were associated with Henry, and you have the right to take this over. So we did. And I've since, or during that period, was hearing people testify, even here on Kauai, with the famous Kauai Springs case. People testified that, you know, the water that's coming out of that mountain is just getting wasted. It's going to the ocean. It's getting wasted. And I said, hold it. Where does that come from? Because it's simply not true. And I don't know where that philosophy originated, but every chance I have, like this one, I say, no, 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 no. The limu must have fresh water. It must. So part of what the chief and the konohiki had to address was not just what you needed, but it was also what nature needed, what the resources downstream needed, and indeed resources in the ocean, which some people don't realize. I know those that gather to learn and protect limu know. And so, you know, it isn't just the riverine habitat. It is where it ends up as well. And then, of course, the water cycle, right? If it doesn't get to the ocean, it doesn't evaporate. And if it doesn't evaporate, it doesn't rain. So there you go. It's really pretty simple. I used to teach the water cycle in classrooms here by starting with, most classrooms today have a sink, and I would take a clear plastic cup and ask the students to watch, and I would fill it with the water from the sink in their classroom, and then I would ask them, how old is this water? And the answers would run the gamut. And fascinating, you know, was made today, was made 10,000 years ago. They'd ascribe numbers to it. It was hysterical. And I would say, this water is as old as time itself. This water, there is no new water. There is no new water. It's a cycle. It goes round and round just like your bicycle. And that seemed to make the point to them. They kind of got it. And then, because little boys have a harder time sometimes concentrating, I would say, dinosaurs pissed in this water. and they love that. They love that. And the girls would go, eek, no, we can't drink that water. And I would explain the filtration system of the earth. But there's no such thing as new water. There's no such thing.
Yep.
You have what you had when this planet was formed. So if I was teaching water, no matter what the level, I'd start with that. There is no new water. So that really helped me get the concept of this is a resource that we must protect, that we must steward, that we must understand. Because I don't think many of us really do. You know, what's in the water and how do we maintain its circulatory system? And it's interesting to me that Aaron wanted to talk about water. I hope that's where Hawaiian studies would begin. To me, that would be very, very appropriate. Because it covers all the other subjects, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it touches everything. And even, you know, like, and so, you know, building on what you said, there, right now, I think the best place for everyone to look, and this is where we'll provide links and stuff, is the Hawaii State Water Plan in its various components.
And yeah, so looking at, like you said, people, we have such a thing, folks. There is a Hawaii State Water Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it exists.
And it's comprised of five different component parts. So you got the Hawaii State Plan itself is built up of the Water Resource Protection Plan, which is done by CWRM, or Commission on Water Resource Management. You got the Water Quality Plan, which is Department of Health, State. The State Water Projects Plan, that's DLNR Engineering. Agricultural Water Use and Development Plan, that's Department of Ag. And then each county has their own water use and development plans. And so that's kind of what I think is, you know, you talk about understanding the situation specifically on Kauai, that's where we would look. And recently, the county completed their water use and development plan update in 2024. So it's a new plan, a lot of outreach and everything in order for its preparation. And what this does is it, and it's within a larger state framework, so they have to follow this framework in order to produce a valid water use development plan. And that framework includes, it requires data and analysis to be based on groundwater and surface water hydrologic units designated by CWRM. On Kauai, there are 13 aquifer system areas and three aquifer sector areas. So the three aquifer sector areas are Hanalei, which is from Kalihiwai to Napali, Waimea, which includes Ke Kaha to Hanapepe, and then Lihue, which is Koloa to Kilauea. And within those respective sector areas, there's aquifer system areas. And so in Hanalei, that's Kalihiwai, Hanalei, Wainiha, Napali. Waimea, that's Ke Kaha, Waimea, Makoeli, and Hanapepe. And Lihue, that's Koloa, Hanamalu, Wailua, Anahola, and Kilauea. And so they look at these, and they have sustainable yield levels in each, and they range from the lowest is 10 million gallons a day, and that's Kilauea and Ke Kaha both have 10. Ke Kaha is obviously much bigger than Kilauea's unit. And the largest is Wailua, got 51 million gallons per day for sustainable yield. And sustainable yield defined as, let me see, what's the definition? The maximum rate at which water may be withdrawn from the water source without impairing the utility or quality of the water source as determined by the commission. So sustainable yield, and itself, they use the precautionary principle to calculate it. So it is a conservative estimate. It allows for not only in-stream flow uses and in-stream flow standards and interim in-stream flow standards, but also it includes, like you said, discharge. So you have to have a certain amount of fresh water going into the ocean via the water table, or the salt water will intrude. There has to be a push out. And so it sustainable yield contemplates all that. And when you look at the analysis, and you can do this yourself, and all you got to do is Google, like, Kauai Water Use Development Plan 2024, and it'll take you to the Department of Water's website. It's a good study. It's very long, like 600 plus pages. But basically, they go down everything and they look at what we always talk about, which is development. and they look at sustainable yields and impact for full build-out. And that's both under the general plan and full build-out under county zoning. And the difference between the two is the general plan contemplates more development because it's just a general plan. And so it's very high level, and it's kind of like the dream thing. You know, all this ag use, all these new houses, this is what we need to house and feed and, you know, for a happy life on Kauai. And then zoning build-out is basically full build-out and of everything that is currently entitled under county zoning, which is less. And in consistently in each and every aquifer system, from Haena to Hanalei, the development of the highest extent allowed by the general plan and county zoning within the various aquifer system areas is sustainable. And the 2035 water demand projection for all aquifer system areas are also sustainable. And in each and every one, the demand side management, such as density control, is not needed based on the full build-out projections. And that doesn't mean that the water use development plan says just use it cowboy style, whatever you want. That's not what it says. It always is very good in recommending use of recycled water and reclaimed water, like they do in the Poipu Reclamation Facility. Hyatt's got a wastewater reclamation facility. Hokuala by the airport's got one. Wailua's got the wastewater treatment plant they use on the golf course, I believe. And so you have these alternative systems, and they encourage it, you know, and minimize this and maximize sustainable. But if you look too, it's interesting, they also have the total existing demand and what we're using right now. And we're well below, I mean, we're barely piercing double digits in some of these aquifer system areas as far as what we're currently using. So, for example, in the Kalua aquifer system, sustainable yield is 29 million gallons a day. Total existing demand, and this all excludes ag, but there's not really a lot of ag going on this island currently. Total existing demand is only 3.78 million gallons a day. So that's 13% of sustainable yield that we're currently using. Honomalu is 16%. Wailua is 0.98%.
So when we talk about, as we often do on Kauai, potential development, we say, well, we don't have the water. We do.
We got the water, yeah.
That argument's not going to hold water. You might not get it in a pipe right now, but the water's there. So it's a matter of transport of water. The other thing I know about water, it's been a little bit of a theme in my life, is that on Kauai, we don't pay for the water. We pay for the transport of the water. We pay for the pipe. That has been drummed into me by our local water department and the Commission on Water Resources Management. Makala, you're not paying for the water. You're paying for the pipe that gets it to you. That's kind of a concept that's taken me a long time to wrap my arms around. But that is, in fact, when you get your water bill, you're paying for the pipe that gets it there. Although my bill goes up when I use more water, so. And the other thing I want to say is that one of the key players, not the author, but one of the key contributors to the law of Napa'akai Oka'aina and that analysis that is now required, has been required for some time, we're just starting to use it, was Hannah Kihalani Springer, who lives in Ka'upulehu, and they get less than an inch. They are on catchment, and they raise livestock, and they garden, and they really live very, very, very close to the earth. She happens to be a classmate of mine, an underclassmate of mine. And we talk about this a lot, and we get in gatherings and we talk about water, and she says, you do understand you're looking at a woman that has none. You know, it's like we live without. It's very, 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 very limited. Of on the hills of Hulalai. And it's she has a very, very, very different perspective, obviously, than we do here. Very different. She doesn't describe it as a struggle. She's a Hawaiian scholar as well, and she describes it as a, you know, it's a fact of life over there, and that's how they plan their lives. That's how they set up their farm and their activities and then their life around lesser water. It's really interesting. You know, this is Kona, and it's rock. There's no water. And she has impressed upon me the vast difference between my perspective and experience with water and hers. It's polar opposites. And it's part of what motivated her to get involved in what we now call the Pa'akai analysis, which she calls Nā Pa'akai Ōka'aina, is the proper term for it. Based on the fact that the resources were limited, and we must be cognizant of that. It's an interesting angle. And when I go there to visit, I find it a little bit disconcerting that it's so vastly different. Her whole perspective, her whole experience, and we're so proud that she is the newest member of the Commission on Water Resources Management. And her angle, you know, must be considered. We had to really fight for her seat. We had to fight for her to be there. And she is the Loea. She's holding the Loea seat there. So she's being uncharacteristically quiet so far. And I have called her out on that. She said, well, you know, the time will come. And when it does, look out, because she can be an orator. But it's because one of the reasons I wanted her on there was that she has this completely different angle, this completely different perspective on water. So, folks, if you're just tuning in, this is Pilikia Opono, kkcr.org. Go to the website if you support this kind of conversation. If you'd like to join, it's 808-826-7771. Although between Mauna Kea and myself, we often don't take a breath, so good luck with that. But Laura manages this rather well and does answer the phone. And today we're talking about water. Why not? It's, you know, we all need it. We all want it. Sometimes on Kauai, we get a little more than we can handle at times. But that's our fault. That's our fault. You know, that's based on development, right? That didn't give much thought to what was going to happen when it rains 52 inches in 24 hours. I don't think anybody plans for that. But I don't know what kind of a record that is. Someday I might have to really find out what kind of a record that is. Because it seems like it's got to be a record somewhere. But I live at Mauka. I live at 750 feet elevation on Kauai. And we get plenty of water. We get plenty of water. And when we don't, things die. They die like instantly because they're not used to that. You know, even we have fewer bugs and fewer slugs and fewer everything when it doesn't rain. Everything is accustomed to a certain quantity, yeah, including the people. We all fuss and fume when we have to get out there with the hose and water things to keep them alive. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. But it serves to remind us that most of the time that system is just coming to us, you know, automatically in a cycle. And at my house, my particular property, we can actually get 120 inches a year without a blinking, because the mountain captures and sends it directly to us. So I live in a land of plenty of water, sometimes too much water. And we have to manage ourselves and the land so that it ends up where it's supposed to end up, which in my world is in the ocean. So if you're interested in the Kauai Water Plan, and there is one, and it's a good one, actually, and how that relates to development that's being proposed, because we all know there's plenty proposals out there. People want to be here. People want to try to help with housing. People have different ways of thinking about that and addressing that. Water always comes up. Is there enough water for that facility, for that business, for that building? And if they pay attention to the water plan, then they should be able to cite that they have considered that and that there is. And if they haven't, then we should all call them on it. You know, was that part of your consideration? Because there will be developers who come here who do not do that. And if they don't, we should call them up and say, you know, did you consult? Did you consider? And we have some really, really good planners right now in the county planning department who focus on it. And I, in my own opinion, think that our current water department is in really good shape. It has good, thoughtful leadership and some dedicated staff. So, you know, they do the best they can, but they do pretty good. They do pretty good keeping an eye on it. So if in the old days there was water management, the Hawaiians didn't just let it run willy-nilly either, right? They directed it. They Yep. sent it to places where it was going to feed us, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
It was always managed.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't left to chance.
No.
And during...
To the extent that they could, yeah.
Yeah, to the extent they could. And knowing that there would be times, because they always knew, right? We even have this list exists today of famine plants, right? That they would eat. Famine foods.
Oh, yeah.
that they would eat.
Yep.
when there was no water. So they always knew that that was a possibility. I don't think we think like that today. I think we think, no, just send another barge.
Yeah, Hawaiians living in Hawaii pre-contact was frequently exercised in famine and scarcity. You know, I mean, it just was, and that's when you look at they just had a different perspective. I catch a lot of flack for being, you know, with regard to development, but if you really look at the Mo'olelo and the Olelo and everything. And like I said in the beginning, it's a wellspring of water to drink. Hawaiians are using water to live. And it kind of, and everyone always talks about vai and vai meaning wealth, right? And so mm-hmm. when you, from a paternalistic standpoint, if you as a parent have all this wealth and you're not, you know, you got tons of money and you're not getting your kids a house, if they need it, you know, if you're not feeding them, you're not giving them water. I mean, what does that mean? So on Kauai, we're wealthy with water, but we're not supporting the Hawaiian and local community to stay here. And I think that's part of the contributing reason why people are leaving. is because it's not affordable because it's so limited. And so does this generation have a duty to make these abundant resources available? And I'm not saying, you know, because you can't go crazy with it. You have to act within the plans, and every developer has to reference the water use development plan and the general plan and everything. I mean, that's also a reason why a lot of development doesn't go on, is because there's so much hoops to jump through. Not whether it's good or bad, it's just what it is. And so I think that, again, it's a question of the intent and the type of development we're talking about, not just development itself, right? Because that really is so broad and vague, so as to mean almost nothing. So that's kind of my big concern, is being pro community, right? And community needs to develop. We all have kids. They're having kids at this point. So that's what we want. We want ag. We need water. We want houses. We need water. We need water for everything. And so I think that's a big, at what point, and we're still fighting development by saying there's not enough water, and that's fine. You can be anti-development if you want, but at what point do we support any degree of development, right? At what point does that become fashionable? And I just hope we can develop houses before it's too late. That's kind of it. So.
Yeah, in Northern California, my experience with my first environmentalism comes from that experience. And I was taught by the kupuna of that place, you control and measure development either by water in or water out. And on Kauai, it's more an issue of how to manage water out. It's more a matter of what we do with our wastewater. What do we do with the water after we have sullied it, after we have polluted it, after we have dirtied it, right? We get the clean water, we get the fresh water, we get the stuff we need to, you know, feed ourselves and to develop, but how we manage the water after we have put bad stuff in it, right, seems to be more the limiting factor here. And frankly, that's what the origin of the plan in Hyena State Park was. The very first notion was about the wastewater, that the Lua wasn't big enough to handle the number of visitors that were there. Yes, the cars were a problem, and yes, the people were a problem, but it was the wastewater that was the original trigger. And the state parks folks came to the people of Hyena and said, we're going to build a bigger Lua, the one to replace the one that was at Ka'e. And I stepped into the middle of the circle and said, no, you're not. Because if you put a bigger Lua, we're just going to get more people, and this place is overrun now. And the Lua that's here now is dysfunctional. And so, no, that's not a solution. And to State Park's credit, they had a couple of engineers who were very, very thoughtful and who didn't feel threatened by that challenge, and who designed a kind of a constructed wetland system with a backup of a septic tank, for sure. But that was novel. It was the first in the state. And it was based on the fact that it was producing, I mean, that there were just too many people. But that was the genesis of the plan to reduce the number of people. Went from something like over 3,000 people a day to 900 people a day. That's a big leap. And I will always credit State Parks for having the gumption, the courage. And in a late night scramble, Alan Carpenter to find the funds to do the things that you see out there now, to limit the entry, to limit the use, and to make it an adaptive management plan. So some days there's fewer people, and then they can roll that number over, and then the next day can have a few more. So it's quite adaptive out there. It's an amazing plan. what makes it work is the shuttle, because that's the whole idea of the stressor and the community and the traffic and the cars and all that and all that. But what began it was water, was the wastewater. And they had plenty of water coming in, but they were not managing the wastewater. So in order to do that, they had to reduce the number, the amount of input, the number of users. And that's the theory. You're going to control development by water in, which is hard to do on Kauai because we have it, or water out, which we've not been very good at on Kauai. Look at all of our treatment plants that are, you know, if they don't think they're failing, I think they're failing. You need to look at in and out, right?
Yeah, and that's, I think, you know, bringing up Hyena is a great example of how development helps the problem, right? The solution to the Hyena wastewater problem wasn't taking out the bathroom. You need a bathroom. It's a better bathroom.
Yeah.
The solution to the user impacts and stress on the environment wasn't less development. It was make a parking lot and control its access. Now I understand. I heard anecdotally, like, they're making millions off of that, and that's going to the community. It's providing jobs to, you know, to the people who should be out there managing the place, and that's the whole point. And so when you look at, like, Wailua wastewater treatment, it needs to be fixed up. It's old. It was good when it was new and it worked, and it's old now. It needs to be, you know, redeveloped, the wastewater lines, everything. And what pays for that is development. It can be good development. It doesn't have to be bad. And so that's what we're talking about. And I think, too, an interesting thing is this is such a complex system that we don't know what, if we're not ahead of it, if we're not exercising our own self-determination via development and steering it to the right way and working with landowners and developers to do the right thing, which I've found they're all willing to do, then you have, like, things that happen that are seemingly unrelated that maybe are related. So, like, for example, and I don't know if I'm talking out of turn, but, you know, the recent ICE raid in Kapahi or whatever, it makes you wonder, like, I mean, I'm assuming those people, they're working here somewhere, probably ag or whatever. But if you're not developing houses to house local people and a local workforce and community, you're bringing people in just like Kalakaua did. He brought Japanese here, and so you bring these, I mean, at one point contract workers, now probably indentured servants. I mean, there was wasn't there a slavery charge or something a couple of years back? I don't even know, but it has all these interesting effects if we're not developing the right way. And it's all the right way.
And we don't have workforce housing. So now workforce housing is a requirement. You want to develop, then you have to have workforce housing. You have to be able to show how you're going to house your workers, where you're going to do it. And that leads to all kinds of, you know, trades and, you know, different kinds of arrangements and deals, and that's fine as long as they get housing.
Some is good and some is bad,
but, you know, they all get housing in one form or another. Local businesses on the North Shore, where housing is so desperately non-existent, have taken to buying homes and housing their workers there, that's fine. That's a good system. Works for them. It costs them. They have to pay big bucks for the house, but they keep their workers. Well, they get their workers and they keep their workers. It's an interesting concept.
Go ahead.
It's an interesting concept. I mean, the first one I was aware of was the Princeville Center, the Foodland thing. And in order for them to expand, they had to build workforce housing. Now, I'm not sure how many of their workers are actually in that workforce housing. So that's a glitch that needs examination. But that's the origin of Kolopua. And, that's what that was. That was a condition of the expansion of Foodland. And
that's the program. The current program is so expensive to develop housing, not even the government can do it. I mean, for decades, it's been you exact it from another development. And
right.
that's the plan. And so, if we want to solve
the
these
plan.
Problems.
It's still the plan. Yeah. I mean, every single resort has an exaction on it, right? Every single one, every single development.
Oh, not only a resort, like any development with more than 10 houses, you have an exaction. And then we just need more houses. There's studies, economic studies saying, housing is the one true trickle-down economic system, because like today's expensive house is tomorrow's affordable house, and so if that's the issue, and better water systems and more efficient water systems are an issue, problems to be solved, then development is how you do it. That's how you pay for it, right? We need to sewer a lot. The cesspool conversion thing, that's very expensive. A lot of local people can't afford it. But we need to pay for it. We need to do it. And that's going to be on the backs of developers. And so, if you want to, you can criticize, you can be a cynic, you can work with people, you can inform, you can help, you can, whatever you want to do. But these are problems that need to be solved, or they don't. And I think the solution then is just, unfortunately, we have to move.
Yeah.
Right?
And we are.
Yes,
and
we are. Where there's more Hawaiians
outside. The
exodus
is clear, yeah.
Totally not.
Yeah. Oh, well. Wasn't sure where we were going to go with this, but as usual, we went somewhere. Thank you, Mauna. This was good. This was good. Say one more time the reference to the water plan, please.
Oh, yeah. Water Use Development Plan 2024, County of Kauai, or the WDUP 2024. You can just Google it, but I'll send it to you and Laura, and it'll be put on the site.
Great.
This morning.
Great. We appreciate it very much, and we appreciate you. And we know this is the beginning of your work day, and appreciate the time that you spend. We know you're a busy guy. It seems like... Seems like all the lawyers are these days, right? Everybody's busy. Planning commission.
Everyone.
I was looking at the audience the other day, and the planning commission seemed like half the room was lawyers. That's what it takes to work your way through the quagmire of development, I guess, these days. It's just too many words for anybody else to understand. But thank you. We know that this is an effort of love on Laura's part and on your part and on my part. And we appreciate you very, very, very much. And have a safe day. And if you folks have ideas for next month's show, we're on the second Wednesday of every month at 7 a.m. Trying to catch us all before we go to work. Send an email to gm@kkcr.org, and Annie will get that to us, and we will follow up as best we are able. So mahalo, Mana, mahalo, KKCR, mahalo, Laura, and we thank the community for paying attention. You guys don't call in very much, but I was going to use the word attack. That might be a little strong. You come after us in the stores. You let Mauna know. You let me know. So that's okay too. we appreciate your feedback one way or t'other. So have a wonderful day, folks, and mahalo nui loa, Mauna, and